Welcome to episode 17 of the Over the Counter Podcast. I'm Mark Eastcheck.
And I'm Andrew Whaley.
And today we're going to talk about the fetishization. Did I say that right?
Fetishization
of possibility. Try spelling that.
No. The official title is going to be Hammocks and the Fetishization of Possibility.
Okay, there you go.
So why hammocks?
Well, hammocks is a great place to start, I think, because a hammock is one of those things that you buy thinking, I am going to sit in that hammock on a late summer afternoon with a glass of iced tea or lemonade and a good novel and just...
Or wine.
And just read my novel and relax and enjoy my backyard or whatever.
Right.
When really, you might put the hammock up toward the beginning of summer and then find yourself there maybe only, say, two or three times the whole summer.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Because you're really busy. You've got a lot of things to do. You've got laundry. You've got to mow the lawn. There are mosquitoes in the backyard. There are all sorts of reasons why you're not actually in the hammock with your glass of lemonade and your novel. Maybe you don't have a good novel right now, or maybe you don't have any lemonade stuff to make lemonade.
So you desire this experience, and you tell yourself, or you respond to advertising that tells you that the only reason you're not in this hammock with this novel and this glass of white wine enjoying this afternoon and everything is great and you're just blissed out is because you don't have a hammock. But
it's
the mosquitoes that are going to be there regardless, and the fact that you have kids or the fact that you're just really busy or, you know, you're ADD and you can't concentrate when you try to read a novel.
Another example of this is on a bottle of iced tea that you can buy at the store. Oftentimes there's like a picture of feet in sandals, like up on the edge of a deck or something.
Yeah.
You know, there's this, they're trying to tell you that by drinking this bottle of iced tea, you will have the experience of relaxing on a back deck or on a hammock.
It's like the Corona commercial. Where they say that, which is one of the greatest taglines ever. Instead of change your whole attitude, it's like change your whole latitude. And they always show you like you're going. Basically, it's like drinking a Corona is like going to like Cabo San Lucas.
Exactly.
And they always show like the beach scene. When in reality, you're just drinking a watered down Mexican beer in the middle of your backyard that you do with your hammock that you're not sitting in.
Well, see, I think one of the things that fascinates me about this is that when people do go on vacation, they actually do sit by the pool. Right,
yeah.
Or sit in a hammock. But oftentimes in the course of a regular week, even if the weather's nice and there aren't any mosquitoes, you're not usually doing that. You know?
Right.
I think most of us aren't very good at taking a segment of our day to just explicitly relax.
And so
in that kind of way.
Okay, if this episode was about relaxation and all that, then that we could stop here. But really, this is symbolic and kind of an icon of what happens in a bunch of our life. The gym membership that you buy, then you never go. That piece of gym equipment you buy that becomes a coat rack.
Right, the weight set, yeah.
Right, that just you ends up. And you brought up a great example of this. You go to the thrift store, and the thrift store is this graveyard of all the things that people thought was going to kind of make things better for them.
Right.
The ice cream maker. Oh, we'll make fresh ice cream.
Yeah, or the popcorn maker.
We'll go down to the farmer's market and we'll get ice cream. We'll get
fresh cream and we'll make our own ice cream at home.
Exactly. It'll be so great. It'll be so much better for us.
And you probably did it once and then you thought, this is too much work. I'm just going to buy ice cream.
Right. Or the bread machine.
The bread machine was a really popular one in the 90s.
Yeah. And so.
But it's actually kind of annoying to make your bread all the time at a bread machine.
Yeah. And
it's easier to buy bread and cheaper.
And this is a good topic for me because I resemble this in a major way. I love the possibility. But I love holding up this potential versus the real situation. And then whenever the real situation never meets the possibility, I just quit and I put it away. So I buy this thing.
Like what?
Like a journal. Okay. I'm really bad. I write 20 journals with the first 5 to 25 pages written in them. And I crave that clean slate. I crave the fresh start. And that's why now you'll see me, I own these.
You just buy really short journals.
I started doing that. I started buying the Moleskine, the little K hairs. They're shorter and they have the paper covers on them instead, and I don't mind blowing off part of them, and it at least gets the gilt out, and I could have my fresh. Most of the time, I use legal pads. Ride on legal pads all the time because I can tear the top sheet off, and I have a clean piece of – I have a clean pad now. But sometimes it's so weird. I need a fresh legal pad. I need one that just comes right out of that nothing has been written on, that there's no pages missing.
I guess I can understand, but not exactly. I was going to say that
I'm mentally ill, Mark. Haven't we discussed this?
Advertisers and marketers prey on this kind of tendency in us, right?
Oh, yeah.
Where they deliberately sell us stuff that they know we're not going to use. So I think the greatest example of this is the whole weight loss industry, right? Where people sell diet programs, they sell special meals, they sell exercise programs, gym memberships, all this kind of stuff that's designed to get you to lose weight or whatever else. And we spend gobs of money on this stuff as a culture, and we don't really lose that much weight. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, some people do, right? But the thing that changes a person and that actually causes them to lose weight or get the six-pack or gain muscle mass or whatever is the commitment that they invest in whatever program they're buying into.
Right.
Right? It's not the program itself. The program itself can't do anything for you.
Our entire culture is kind of set up on promoting this idea that the change that is required is somewhere other than inside you.
Right.
It's something that you don't have, or a change in your situation. You need to be able to go someplace else, or you need to have this other thing to pick up and put down. You have to have this. Well, and those things could all be great tools, but none as the graveyard of exercise bikes,
right?
That would cover Texas in America would suggest is that it's not about having an exercise bike. The real change has to happen inside of you. And now I don't know how that plays out with my journal or all the stupid things that I bought, but I mean, maybe you buy shoes because, you know, you think it's going to make you look pretty, you know, and it's like, well, either you're pretty or not, or there's the things that you can do to make you look pretty are not putting on yet another pair of expensive shoes. In reality, you need to change this and this and this. Or guys do this with workout stuff, or you know, I got to get this new grill, and then we're going to cook out all the time. We're going to save money because I'm going to cook all the time.
Right.
And then it sits there.
But you can't imagine how many grills there are on Craigslist.
Yeah.
Right. And people who bought a really fancy grill with a smoker box and everything.
See, you know what?
And never really used it much.
I have a pretty crappy grill.
Yeah.
And I use it all the time.
Sure.
So I really need to get on Craigslist and get a real grill thing. Because I grill constantly.
So I think it's kind of a weird tendency in us. And yet it makes sense, but it's really an expression of our weakness, right, that we do this.
Yeah, I think there's a fundamental impulse that, I mean, it has to be.
I was going to say another thing about it. To me, it seems specifically American. And what I mean by that is we think we can turn almost anything into a product that then you can then buy. And I think it's, on one level, it's true that you can psychologically do that, but in reality, you can't. So meaning you can say, if you do this program or take this diet pill or you choose this meal plan, then you can get a six-pack and be super healthy and be strong and feel young again. When in reality, whatever product you're selling isn't going to do that for the person.
And I think that people do try to use these products or these purchases in some way. I know I do. Into hacking their own behavior, right? I just now passed on buying a 3-month membership to the University of Denver, the Curse Center over there, to swim. And it was partially just because I just didn't want to spend the money right now, but it's a really good deal, the other above. And I went a couple of times, but the reason I didn't do it is I started discerning in my mind, I'm thinking that if I drop this money that I really can't afford right now and buy this membership, that will make me take the time to go do that.
Right, because I'll feel so guilty for having spent the money.
But you know what? And then I some part of me or God or my guardian angel said, and has that worked for you in the past? And I went, and I thought about all the gym memberships I've had for years on end that I never went to. I thought about online programs I've bought that was going to help me get this or get over this or learn this new skill or whatever that they timed out and I just sat there taking $20 a month out of my account and I didn't ever use. And I thought, no, you know what? I am going to walk and do kettlebell like every other day. And when I've spent a week or 3 weeks walking and doing the kettlebell that I already own, then I'll start paying to swim once at a time at public pools. It's the summertime. It's nice. And if I get to where I'm like, you know what? I really want to swim every day or every other day, and I'm bumping into the schedule, well, then you know what? Then I'll say, let's look at a gym membership with a pool.
Okay. So but let's talk about this on a more kind of universal level, right? Yeah. That all of these products and things, all of these possibilities that we hold out to ourselves, we're in a certain sense fetishizing them, right? Is that I say it right this time?
I think so, yeah.
So
however you turn the word fetish into a verb,
the possibility itself into a goal or a target or something to be grasped at,
right?
Rather than actually thinking about changing our habits and our habits of thinking to obtain the goals that we seek.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it seems like it's a...
It's a way of dumbing down one's willpower, right?
Exactly.
By saying, I don't need to change anything inside me to make this happen. I don't need to change the way I choose to get a six-pack. All I need to do is buy this product, spend the money, and then boom.
But see, I don't think it's even just a product thing. I mean, I think our consumer culture has played on this, but I think it's a more fundamental human instinct. And I think it's a matter of personality. I don't think everyone's like this. I am like this. And so a good example, I will want to be working on my book. I need to sit down and work on my book. I need my laptop and a flat surface. Okay, but I'm easily distracted. So sometimes I'm home. I can't really work at home. I will get in my car and I will bring my laptop. And I know that the last time I did that, I drove in circles and tried 3 different coffee houses and there was something wrong with every one of them. And then I ended up back at home and I ended up not working on my book. So what I really need to do is put the headphones in, put Vivaldi on, get myself a cup of coffee and force myself to work on my book.
Okay.
But no, I go drive in circles and try 3 or 4 coffee houses.
I think you're keen on something that's really important here in that there's a way in which we can trick ourselves into thinking that there is something external that will grant me the goals that I seek, when in reality, usually what needs to change is something internal.
Right.
And so in order to accomplish whatever goal, whether it be writing a book or getting physically fit or making more money or whatever, usually that internal change needs to happen first before any kind of external change is really going to happen. And I think the reason that we want it to be external is because if it's external, it's easier. If it's external, I don't have to worry about it. If it's external, then I can blame other things and other people for my problems. If it's internal, then I've got to look into myself and change myself and do something different. But and what happens is I think when most of us turn inside and start looking at ourselves, we end up in like a circular pattern. And what I mean by that is our cyclical pattern, right? We're constantly engaged in this like self-criticism, and then we don't know how to solve it, how to get out of the cycle of self-criticism. So we want to just avoid that by trying to blame everything good or bad on external things.
Right.
So the reason I'm thinking about this a lot these days is I'm reading this book.
You're thinking about buying a hammock, right?
I'm reading this book from the early 80s called The Inner Game of Tennis. Have you heard of this book?
No.
It's fascinating. I mean, it's a lot like a lot of other performance books or whatever that have been written since then. But what he does is he talks – I mean, he's trying to give advice to tennis players. He's a tennis teacher, the author, who I will look up. I don't remember his name. But what he says is that you have self-one and self-two. And he's observing this in terms of tennis players. Self one, he calls the teller, the telling self, right? That's the one that after a bad shot says out loud, "Oh, you shouldn't have done that," you know. And the self two is the silent doer, the one who actually does all the actions of tennis, you know, the forehand and the backhand and the mm-hmm, running around mm-hmm. the court and all of that. And that the way to win the inner game of tennis, right, is to basically quiet down the teller mm-hmm. and change what the doer is doing without engaging in this like self-critical process that's actually destructive.
And that's a whole industry of like the interface between Zen and golf.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's the same thing. And I mean, to me, it's like a left brain, right brain type of deal, right? Where the teller is the left brain, linguistic part or whatever, where it's like, you know, laying down the law, right? And the right brain is the creative kind of part or whatever.
I think what's interesting, though,
even though the brain location, you know, where those parts of the brain are is really controversial.
Yeah, they're really starting to figure that out. It's not quite as linear. But that being said, I think it's interesting that one of the one of my constant interests in this world is the philosophy of Karol Wojtyła. And I think one of the things that he brings out, one of the key things, and it's as old as Aristotle, but is this idea that when you act, you are both subject and object of that action. And so you can act on yourself, so to speak, right? You can do this.
You can shave or something?
Well, yeah, physically, but you can do that in your interior life. You can choose to do something and you can go, look, I want to do this. I want to buy another blender. Even though I know I'm not, because I can get up every morning and make that one smoothie that's going to make me healthy. But I know that I don't ever make the smoothie, and I'm not going to do that. So why don't I do that? And you can choose. And everything in you is going, no, if we just get the blender, we'll make the smoothie. And you can sit yourself down. Or like Ignatius.
Right. Or if I just buy these weights or this weight set, I'll get
you healthy. Can kind of talk to yourself in the way that Ignatius talks about this in discernment stuff and spiritual exercises, about how you consider the thing you're thinking about and about one way or the other, and you consider what you would say if a close friend that you love deeply came to you and you could objectively listen to both sides and then give him advice out of love for him. Right. And so I think that what you can do is you can kind of like act on yourself. You can choose to hack this in some way, but by looking at just whether or not it's working for you and whether it has worked for you. And because I think it's funny, it's like I almost rearranged my office over the weekend. I have a bedroom and an office, and they're one big room. It's a big L shape. I have a huge room. It's a big L shape, right? And I'm just convinced that if I just had this little pocket office over here with a wall that I could hang some stuff on, and I could like, then I'll start drawing sketches again for ideas, and I'll put it up.
But really, what you're doing is fetishizing possibility.
I am, yeah.
Because that's not going to happen.
Because I could be
doing
all...
Because you already have a desk in your room. You could already be drawing if you so desire, and you're not.
But I've convinced myself, because I'm picturing myself over where my bed is now, but now that's my desk here. It's the same desk.
Exactly.
It's the exact same chair.
Now, it's not to say
the same windows and the same wall. It's a different part of it.
It's not to say that changing our physical circumstances doesn't at all affect our habits or behavior.
That's true, yeah.
Right, because I think what needs to happen if we want to change a habit, right, is if we're going to change the physical circumstance, we also have to make a very conscious decision to change exactly what we're doing along with that physical change, and that the change of physical circumstance, whether it be rearranging the furniture or whatever, will help us commit to making that actual change. But what we need to master in terms of, like, how do you say this, becoming people who are in charge of our habits, right, is not the external rearrangement of things, but the internal rearrangement of things. That's what we need to master.
But you can also learn what works and doesn't work with the physical world to kind of hack your thought. Like, I mean, David Allen talks about this, where you know, it's kind of like the way I would think about it is like, I want to get up in the morning and run. Okay, you really, that's a huge goal.
Right.
It's 5:30. You could hit the button and sleep another hour. So that sounds daunting to yourself. So you tell yourself, look, all I'm going to do is I'm going to get up, I'm going to put my shorts and my t-shirt on, and I'm going to put my socks on and put my running shoes on. After I've done that, I am perfectly well allowed to take it all off and crawl right back into bed. But I'm just going to get up, and I've laid it out on my desk chair, and I'm going to put my shoes on, because it takes a lot of effort. Once you've got that on and you've kind of got some momentum, it takes a lot of effort to give up on yourself and take all that back off and get back in bed.
Right.
But you kind of give it. It's like What About Bob? That movie, What About Bob?
Yeah.
Baby steps.
Right.
Baby steps to the door. Baby steps to the elevator.
Okay, so
it's like you have to.
There's a really interesting book I read a couple years ago called Switch. You would really like this book.
Yeah.
But it's about how an organization can change or cannot change. But he gets in this whole metaphor of the elephant driver. Have you heard of this thing?
Uh-uh.
Okay, so you basically have – it's again, it's a self-one, self-two type thing.
Okay.
That self-one, right, the teller, is the driver.
Okay.
Who's sitting on the elephant, driving the elephant. Self-two is the doer, right, that has a lot of momentum, right, and can work really hard and move and change things, but it needs the teller to tell it what to do.
So it's the elephant?
Right, so self-two is the elephant, the doer. And that the problem for most people, not everybody, the problem for most people...
Oh, this is by Chip Heath.
Yeah, the problem for most people is that the elephant driver, the teller, isn't clear enough about what he wants from the doer, right? And that he debates with himself and can't decide where to drive the elephant, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But finally, once he commits and gives clear instructions, step by step, the elephant can head in the right direction. You know, and I think that's kind of what we're talking about. Is that the inertia, so to speak, of habit is a really powerful force that's very difficult to overcome.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I just now set some goals for I'm turning 44 on October 2nd. And I set some physical goals, like a certain amount of fat I want to lose and some things I want to get done. So that when I'm on my 44th birthday, I'm like, oh, hey, I've met goal number one on this bigger plan. I'm just gonna, you know, so try to set some goals. And it's interesting because there's been so much study. You would think there's been so much study about visualization, especially in the sports world. Like, I mean, it's a crazy number. Like, if you look at any Olympic athlete and you go, hey, what percentage of your time do you think they spend in visualization? Like actually seeing themselves going down the slope and thinking through it. And how much time do they spend actually on the slope? And it's like 85% or something in visualization.
Wow.
Like it's huge.
Yeah.
They spend this immense amount of training time seeing themselves going through it, right? So you would think that, oh, the hammock, I can picture myself in the backyard and you and getting used to that reality. But what's interesting is there's been all this work done about visualization, right? And starting back in the 70s with like Chad Helmstetter and what to say when you talk to yourself and all that. So, what I've realized, and there's been some really good stuff written here lately about visualization of the process as opposed to the outcome. And so you picture what it would take point A, point B, point C to get to that thing, and you visualize yourself doing those actions.
Yeah.
And that is what actually drives change, it seems like.
Okay, so here's another just kind of interesting data point on this. And that is when McDonald's first came out with salads,
yeah.
they introduced them at, you know, a few restaurants just to test market them or whatever. And what happened was when they introduced salads, the sale of Big Macs went up.
That is fascinating. That's awesome.
Because people were fetishizing the possibility of making the healthy choice and eating the salad next time.
Or maybe even the idea of getting a salad, they were going to McDonald's to get a salad. That brought them into the restaurant. And then they realized that what they really were getting a hit out of was the possibility without actually having to suffer through the salad.
Exactly, exactly.
So they buy the Big Mac and they sit there and they think about, I'm going to eat a salad next time while they're eating a Big
Exactly,
Mac.
Right. So they get that sort of psychological relief, so to speak, of having made the right decision when they actually didn't make the right decision.
It's like when you go to some bars and there's a sign that says free beer tomorrow.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly.
All,
yeah.
It's how you come back tomorrow, and it's like, well, it's free beer tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of always, we kind of outsource to the future the hard reality of doing something
right.
today.
Right, which is why it's easier to eat the ice cream now than do the workout now.
And
right?
I always say, why do today what tomorrow you could put off the day after tomorrow? I
mean, so
procrastination,
after
another podcast.
After they did the test marketing thing, they quickly released salads in all the restaurants across the country and sale of hamburgers and Big Macs went off.
That is so evil and genius.
Right?
It's just,
right.
It's like,
no, but, it's exactly what we're talking
about. I'm sitting here judging them, and I'm also trying to figure out how to apply that in the world of coffee at the same time. It's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah, no, it's it's the same thing as people who sell exercise equipment or weight loss programs or whatever else, right? You're selling a possibility that really can only come about through an internal change in the person.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? It's the decision maker that has to make the decision.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Now I just feel like I've got to go do a whole bunch of habit-changing stuff when I get home.
I feel like I'm going to go lay in a hammock and drink a Corona and while my ice cream makes. I'm going to stop by the thrift store on the way home and I'm going to make
and
good
get a bread
on
machine.
I'm going to, well, no, I can't have the gluten, but
oh, right.
I'm going to
tapioca bread.
I'm going to stop on back on the thrift store on the way home and make good on all those promises that everybody made by making myself some ice cream. Popcorn and laying in my hammock while I surf the Craigslist for a really nice grill. Barely used for a good price. But so,
yeah, well, okay, so you have the idea now about what it means to fetishize possibility. I think I said it right this time.
Yeah, to set out as the object of your actions what could happen and what it would look like.
Kind of like buying a book that you never actually end up reading.
Which was one of the examples that I used before we started the podcast when we were talking about the topic. I have – and now part of that is because I'm kind of building a library. But I have bought 6 books in the last 2 weeks. Now, given there was a sale at Notre Dame University Press, but
so I
won't read most of them.
So the point is that after this podcast, you should probably go into your basements and get rid of the exercise equipment that you're not using and go through your books and get rid of the ones that you're never actually going to read ever.
No, you should send those books to me
and,
at 6160.
And next time you're tempted to buy something like a piece of exercise equipment or a weight loss program or any other fetish of possibility,
yeah,
you should think twice and think about what sort of internal change you could make that would save you some money.
And you know what else you should do? You should go to facebook.com/OTC podcast and comment on this podcast, ask questions, continue the conversation, and propose possible topics on our wall. And maybe you will hear your topic here on I was trying to come up with something cool, like maybe your possibility will become more than a fetish. It'll become a digital reality on the over-the-counter podcast. But
so
that's my Patton Oswalt voice.
While you are throwing away your old, unused exercise equipment and thinning out your book collection, perhaps you could think about how great it will be to listen to the next episode of the Over-the-Counter podcast. I'm Mark Eastcheck.
And I am Andrew Whaley.